is the Queensland Country Hour with Ali Felton-Taylor on ABC Radio Queensland.
It's day five and we're still alive here at Beef Australia's 2021. If you haven't caught us here all week, we're aiming to give you a slice of all the action at this, the Southern Hemisphere's largest cattle exposition. And I tell you what, there are exhibits everywhere and exhibitors everywhere. They were judged on the hoof last night. A Shorthorn was the bull that was given Interbreed Supreme Champion Bull. The Charolais took out the female. If you didn't hear it on the Rural Report, you'll hear snippets of that today throughout the program. We're also going to ask more questions around property prices. That's coming up for you really soon on the Queensland Country Hour. Thanks for your company.
Nick Jobe here from Royalla Shorthorns at Yeovil in New South Wales with the Supreme Male Exhibit, the Supreme Champion Bull at Beef 21. You're listening to The Country Hour from Rockhampton.
And we're going to hit some news straight up at Beef Australia 2021, Australia's newest meat processing facility. In fact, the first in Queensland for almost 30 years. Near Clermont in central Queensland, readying for its first official kill, scheduled for the month of August. We've talked about Josie and Blair Angus's signature on-farm facility. It's featured on Landline, on the telly as well. But it's getting to the pointy end. And you've brought along a well-known industry identity to head up your team. Anyone in the processing game would know the name Pat Gleeson, formerly of NH Foods at the Oakey facility, and I know he's been working in a consulting role with you, but are you counting putting him on staff as a coup, Blair Angus?
It's definitely a coup, Ali. Pat and I have been friends for quite some time, and it's certainly given us a great deal of confidence as he's embraced the project and now has told us he wants to be involved for the long term. So he's coming on as our GM. I think really that gives other producers a lot of confidence as well. But no doubt our family, our children all know Pat very well, and we know that this learning period we'll be going through, he'll be there to guide us.
Pat Gleeson, let's hear from you.
Yes, thanks, Ali. It's, yes, very exciting for me, and it's been great to be part of it with such a great family. You know, it's definitely a brave move. So once you put your name to it, you know, it just gives you more surety to make it work, you know. So we're starting to get the right pieces in the right spot and already started looking at recruiting some other people to come in. So, yeah, a lot happening at the moment.
You're out of running a facility under international ownership to running one that is solely Australian owned. What do you think the differences will be?
It's a lot easier to talk to these people. It gets back to more family focused, you know, and yeah, and it's good to work with a family with such a great understanding of the bush that know it so well. So it makes my job a lot easier.
What do you think the potential is for this facility?
We've been talking numbers. Yeah, I think we can get it up to 400 a day. Yeah, as time goes on, we've certainly scoped it out. We're not going to start at that, but yeah, we'll have the capacity to do so.
And to put that in the picture for people outside the beef processing game, where does that sit at? I mean, obviously it's a smaller scale facility to some of the majors, but how far behind?
You know, there's a lot around that 600 mark, 600 head a day. So, you know, you're starting to creep up there, but you know, baby steps first. So, you know, we'll start at 100 and work our way up and, you know, getting recruitment people in the bush is always a challenge. So there's plenty of challenges to get to that point. So, yeah, we'll start off small and continue to work up.
Full disclaimer, I have actually lived at Sondela myself. Tell me, Pat Gleeson, is it going to be a challenge getting people out there?
We've already got some interest already from people that have worked with us previously. I've already got an operations manager up there that I work with for 20 odd years, so he's moved up and he's there as we speak, and there's quite a few people want to follow him up. So I think I'm quite confident we'll get a small nucleus of well-trained people, and it's a bit like build it and they will come from that point, you know.
He's telegraphing his punches. He's on a poaching campaign, if you will. Let's go back to you, Blair and Josie Angus. Meat and Livestock Australia analysis this morning is pointing to pain for processors, particularly in procurement. Obviously, a little bit of rain about, and we know it's patchy in Queensland. We'll put that caveat there. Not everyone's had a drink, but it means that margin is probably a bit tighter. Are you worried about that, given that you're looking at commissioning in July? And I know you're a closed system, you've got a feedlot. So is it okay for you? Are you feeling confident?
I think we're very fortunate to have a great team on the ground already in terms of our sales team and headed up by Tess Cam, our very, very clever niece. And so they've set themselves some goals this year to step it up and step towards the processing plant. They've been going incredibly well in what has been a tough environment this year. We've got a lot of interest, from producers. There's plenty of people watching, some with optimism, some with a bit of doubt, but there's plenty of people watching. And I think we've got a lot of producers in our area who are pretty excited to see the development happen and a sales team who are chomping at the bit and ready to go.
You've got everyone talking anyway. Tell me, you are producers yourself and you've got a feedlot there at Sondela. Are there extra cattle to buy?
There certainly is, Ali. Our own herd will probably only fill around 20% of our capacity when we get going properly. But the important part is, we've been doing the branded beef now for 22 years. It's not just producers that are excited. Our customers are very excited. So we're exporting to 30 countries. Hopefully we can get those accreditations in place as quickly as we can. We've been speaking to the department for 5 years. They've been on the journey with us. So hopefully we can get that facilitated quite quickly. So I understand what you're saying about the price of cattle, but certainly while we've got that interest from our customer base, and also we have a lot of producers in our immediate area that have seen what we've done over the last 22 years and actually want to be a part of that. Everything is a challenge, but we do enjoy a challenge. But certainly we're pretty confident with that.
You're in livestock production and indeed the middle part, feedlotting and indeed processing. You certainly do love a challenge. Speaking to some of those export destinations, do you feel like there'll be growth? There's obviously perhaps a challenge for China.
That's right, but China we've had some rocky times just recently, but they've certainly been a good trade partner prior to that. And, we all hope that there's some common sense comes around soon, because it's certainly not the customers in China that have created this problem. There's a disagreement at a different level, so it's beyond their control. We have a lot of people that know our product in China, and certainly when it does get access back into there, there'll be plenty of support. It's an important market, China, but we have so many important markets. Europe, facilitating the free trade agreement with the UK and Europe are massive, and we're trying to play a role in that as well, because, if we can get liberalised trade into those countries, we've got a lot of people that really appreciate this product over there.
So when you start processing, will you send to China?
If we get accreditation.
Yes.
That's the thing.
That's
a
hurdle.
We have to get accreditation. If we get accreditation, we certainly will.
Let's jump back to processor margins for a second. Is that something, we're hearing from everyone that there is processor pain. Does it concern you?
I think at the moment, we're service processing with Casino, with the Northern Cooperative, and I guess our team are, hopefully banking a bit of margin, for Casino as we speak, and we do, intend to continue that relationship down south as we move into the space ourselves as well. We're still source cattle down south. So I think we're quietly confident. I think, Pat, has his experience has been incredible in being able to, really break down our process design and flow. Some of the sustainability measures that we've put in, I hate that word, but I said it. Some of the, that we've put in terms of, we'll be the only plant out there without a boiler. Our entire heating requirements on water are coming from waste heat recovery. I think, we've had the advantage, all of the advantages of being a greenfield site, and we really hope that, whilst we're whilst we're not aiming to be the lowest cost producer on the market by any means, you know, with a significant focus on high quality, you know, we do feel that we're, you know, we do feel that we can kind of hit the ground running, and Pat's been a big part of, you know, of establishing that basis, I guess.
We'll keep in touch with you on the accreditation front. But just finally back to you, Pat Gleeson, you've been in the game a long time. What about these processor margins? I'm just thinking of the industry as a whole. What's your feeling? And I know you won't comment to specifics. I won't ask that of you. But
If you look at it over the years, the markets have certainly diversified into a lot of product that, you know, once upon a time used to go to rendering, for example. So, you know, I can remember early days, if you, a yield of 68% whatnot was about the standard, you know. Now with bone and everything else and with what they're retrieving in offer rooms, you know, you're talking 85, 90% plus. So, you know, processes have got a lot smarter, the marketing's got a lot smarter, so there's little goes out to rendering these days. Virtually everything goes in the box bar the bellow.
It's an efficient business now, is what you're saying. Do you think anyone, I mean, obviously we're hearing people dropping shifts left, right and centre. Will there be more pain before there's gain?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a challenge for quite some time. And, you know, but as numbers build up, you know, that will reduce. But that's unfortunately part of the process in Australia where, you know, droughts and droughts, you know, have such a significant impact. And we've had a drought for the last 5 or 6 years and the numbers have just continued to replenish. So, yeah, but we're on the upward trend now.
You're on the up and up.
Yeah.
And with a new position, you've heard it here first on the Queensland Country Hour, the new General Manager in Pat Gleeson. Josie and Blair Angus, thank you both for spending time with us here on the Country Hour. You're so busy. You're off to lunch, all of you, aren't you? Where are you heading?
The Celebrity Chef. Yeah, we're sponsoring the Celebrity Chefs today. And Adrian Richardson, he's cooking up a storm over there. But I do hope you do come to visit at Sondela, your home where you grew up, and knew your parents very well. And we purchased it from your family. It was be great to have you back there.
Blair Angus and Josie, full disclaimer there. Thank you both very much. It's good to get it out in the open so everyone knows. Thank you all. Thank you, Pat Gleeson. The new GM, of course, of Signature Beef on Farm in Pat Gleeson. It's 17 past 12.
Hello, my name is Oscar Hills. I'm from Mara, Queensland, and you are listening to the Queensland Country Hour.
Now on the Country Hour, while ever people are talking about Australia's newest meat processing facility, they're probably also talking about property prices because they've been at high levels for some time now. And while the price of water has meant records for some in irrigation country, we're going to talk now about land geared for beef production, what prices are doing and what we could see off the back of this beef market buoyancy. No better place to have a yak about it at Beef Week. I mean, people are known to speculate about property prices at cattle sales, country school fates, even church. So suffice to say, it's the talk of the town, perhaps not unlike church. We're going to glean who's in heaven. Are the sellers in heaven, the agents, are the people who market them, or the buyers who've secured hallowed turf, or is it the banks? I'm joined here on the Queensland Country Hour by Colliers Sean Hendy and Rabobank's Brad James. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks, Ali.
Lovely to have you both here at Beef Week. Let's speak to values first of all. We've seen some huge prices paid for irrigation water, and then, of course, land associated with that has done very well too. What about beef?
Yeah, Holly, the markets have certainly enjoyed a very good time. I believe that market is a very efficient mechanism at the end of the day. We've seen tremendous, you know, increases in value in the cotton industry, as you've said, and that's been driven by productivity efficiencies in water. And I think we're seeing the same in the beef industry as well. We're seeing the efficient operators who have got the capacity, certainly enjoying the confidence in the industry with low interest rates, strong commodity prices, because of domestic demand and herd rebuild, but also the global craving for protein. You know, it's good times for the industry.
In terms of some of the deeper analysis into land values, can you fill me in on some of that? I mean, obviously it's apples and oranges between, you know, a place up in the Gulf as compared to a place in central Queensland as compared to a place down closer to the border. But are there some real trends there?
Yeah, there certainly are. To sort of help compare apples with apples, you know, within those different regions, we use a denominator called average, an adult equivalent. So we can sort of look at what's happening, you know, in northern markets, central Queensland markets, and southern markets. And obviously we've got different breeding systems with operating systems within those geographic regions. But, you know, there is relativity at the end of the day, and we have to understand, you know, those livestock production systems and their drivers of profits, and the best way of doing it is through that old equivalent. So it's very important to be able to understand carrying capacities and production systems in regions and the economics. And that's why we sort of believe that, you know, yeah, sure, prices are strong, but deeper analysis, we're seeing the efficient growers, operators doing well.
So how does it compare in terms, and I know you can't compare sales, you know, say when something like the Stanbroke breakup was happening and there was really big money, is it comparable to around that time?
Well, when you take into account, okay, the cost of money, what was happening, you know, a different period of interest rates, we've got, you know, there's been an evolution in production systems, you know, properties are becoming more efficient, greater utilisation. So one of the things that the beef industry has, particularly in the north, you know, the opportunity is to increase that utilisation. So we're still seeing properties that have got a level of utilisation of, you know, water and pasture of maybe about 15-20%. You know, with better management, better utilisation through fencing and water, you know, we could see that utilisation go up to 30 or 40%. So there's still significant opportunities for production capability increases.
So there's value in a block that isn't finished, that needs development?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, the cost of developing that additional adult equivalent is, at the moment, significantly less than the cost of acquiring a new adult equivalent.
Thank you, Sean Hendy from Colliers. You've talked about interest rates a couple of times there, so let's talk about that with you, Brad James from Rabobank. Money's cheap. It's the talk of the town. Is now the time to buy for people?
Well, yeah, I don't think interest rates should be a predeterminer as to whether or not you're going to expand and buy, but it's certainly an enabler. I think the important thing with the dynamics of the entire industry really is this general alignment of the planets. When we think of commodity price, interest rates, access to finance is important. A healthy banking system is important, trying not to be parochial, but if we don't have that and we haven't got access to leverage capital, we find it hard to expand. And then, of course, the commodity price is good too. But I think it's important for anyone doing their sums on expanding, whilst interest rates are low, to do your assessment on how it looks when they're higher, not 20%. But certainly higher, and we tend to do that as well with our clients. Just watching that market move has been quite extraordinary. Sort of think back 20 years, 2001, very easy to reflect back on country that would sell for $1,500 a beast area in, say, that Middlemount area, maybe the southern part of that, the southern part of the northern Brigalow Belt, if you like, probably south of Middlemount, more breeder country. I recall a place out there particularly sold for $1,500 a beast, and I was aghast. And within a very short amount of time, up to 2007, pre-GFC, that same property changed hands for $3,000 a beast. Today, that property would probably change hands for, you know, perhaps $8,000 or $9,000 a beast. That's breeder country. So, and all the while, during that early part of 2000, the bullock price was around $3.20 over the hooks. Whereas today, I think it's closer to over $6 over the hooks on various grids. So the correlation of the commodity and where it's trading at versus where the land is trading at is not there, and it never has been there. So that's why the predeterminant to someone's ability to expand with low, high interest rates doesn't matter, is the level of gearing that they have to carry to go and do that. And the cash flow doesn't lie.
And there's certainly plenty to choose from at the moment in terms of properties on the market. Very conscious here at the ABC that we can't put a big fat ad for certain properties on the market as we speak. But Richard Brosnan from Ray White Rural has a property on his books. It's owned by a well-known grazing family, and he's put it out as an EOI. I asked him about the types of people who have been taking a peek at that place, but he didn't give me much.
Can't talk about any property in particular, Ali, but generally overall, the property market is very buoyant, very strong. There's obviously very good producer interest, especially in central Queensland.
So that's family farms?
Family farms. A bit of a pent-up frustration trying to grow and expand the family with what's going on, so it's a great succession. It's great for the industry.
Corporates, internationals?
Corporates, yeah, they're always in the background analysing what they need to do on their asset value, so they're always there. Internationals, probably a little bit more limited and probably more timed to the corporates these days and the current environment from the last 12 months.
You surprised with the amount of interest?
I'm not surprised. We've seen a pent-up frustration for about the last 3 or 4 years, people trying to acquire stuff, the strong cattle market, low interest rates, commodity looks good. There's just an urge to grow, and it's great for the industry.
Richard Brosnan from Ray White Rural. On to another cattleman, a well-known cattleman, Cameron McIntyre. He's bought a big property near Bohemia, dropped some $22 million just recently. He's told me what he sees in the future of the industry.
It's about half an hour from home. It's not too bad a place. It's about 12 or 13,000 acres. It's got some little bit of forest country and mainly softwood sort of country. Needs a bit of work doing on it. But hopefully it'll end up a good place. It'll fit in with our other properties.
It was a rather big price tag. Is $22 million the reported price correct?
Yeah, it's probably about $2 million over what I thought we'd have to pay for it. Yeah,
got the bank manager on speed dial, no doubt, as a lot of people do when you're looking to acquire property in this market. Why do you see strength? Why is that good value in your mind?
Arlie, we've had a good run. We've always been the cattle industry, and we've had a good run out of it. And except for the cattle depression, any time we've ever bought a property, it's been at the top of the market. We don't seem to be able to pick the bottom. But, you know, capital gains has always been very good, and the cattle market's been good to us. So we felt that if we didn't stay on the merry-go-round, you'd never get on later on, because who knows where it's going to go. And this might bring us unstuck, but we'll keep going.
You're one of those family farmers who have generations underneath you. You're looking to pass it on and build something big here. Have you got confidence in that?
Oh, yeah. I think we've got to. The kids enjoy it. Our son Tom and his wife Liz, you know, they've got three little kids, and they're very interested in the whole show and got good staff, and it was just a logical progression without looking at the price. Place was there, it was suitable, and yeah, hopefully it'll work out for us.
That's Cameron McIntyre, just recently paid $22 million for a property near Bohemia. And that price, I mean, it seems like a big price for a block, does it not, Sean Hendy?
On a dollar per acre basis, it's certainly up there with the top, you know, the top end of the range for the market. I don't know the block specifically, but I know some of the country in that area. And the values, you know, from, you know, discussions with other people, when we look at an adult equivalent basis, seems to be falling in line, you know, in terms of a dollar per AE. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to sort of delve into that sale a little bit more detail and see where it sits. And, you know, with some of the work we're doing on, I'll be looking at that pretty soon too.
And you're busy?
Yeah, very busy at
the
moment.
Car filled up, or are you to planes nowadays?
Bit of both, yeah. And at the moment, I've got work, you know, spreading from, you know, basically the Carpentaria through to Griffith, so, yeah.
Very good. And what about you, Brad James? Speaking to the future of something like the beef industry, obviously the banking sector as a whole has a lot of confidence in it. Is that true? And what about the future?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. So our level of confidence in the broad sectors is high. Not immeasurably high, but high. We have cautious optimism on the beef industry at the present time, particularly around those land prices. If it was land, that was not lamb.
Yes.
Someone thought I said lamb the other day. and I think it's important that we keep a measured eye on where things are going with the industry.
The risks, what do you say the risks at?
Well, the risks, the cash flows never lie, the numbers never lie. The amount of revenue and the expenses that you need to lay into that business to acquire a property, they tell the true story. The question for everyone going into an expansion mode is what happens if? And everyone needs to do that. The value of that land is largely immaterial, providing the cash flow can sustain whatever you've chosen to pay for it. And those figures never lie. I think different people have different tolerances for risk. Some people have a greater level of tolerance for risk and have a greater vision for where the market's going. But at the end of the day, I think most everyone who buys these assets tends to buy intergenerational assets. They're not trading properties. So the value of the place that they buy is largely immaterial, providing the cash flow they can generate can service it. And some people need to borrow, some people don't need to borrow, ironically, to do this. So there's just so many different dynamics at play. But so far as the bank goes, wherever we've got leveraged capital, wherever people have needed to borrow and create an expense to acquire a property, it's prudent for us to make sure that if it gets dry, or when it gets dry, which then has an impact on productivity, as we know, and if prices correct, and if interest rates go up, that they can sustain that position.
And due diligence, obviously the name of the game, with things like the Royal Commission looming over the whole of the banking sector's head in terms of making sure that things will work out if money is lent. Is that holding things up a bit?
Our position post-Royal Commission hasn't changed on how we view a client's sustainability. Certainly the Royal Commission played an important part in making sure that everyone was focused on the client, as we should, because it's not in our interest not to focus on a client. If their position's jeopardised, so is ours. So the prudence, I think, of making sure that year on... There are so many variables in agriculture. What you lay into a balance sheet is a fixed cost in terms of what you pay for a property. And if that's extraordinarily high, that's the constant. The variable is the income you can generate to service it.
Brad James, thank you so much for your time. He's from Rabobank. And Sean Hendy from Colliers, thank you both. Where are you heading? Have you got lunches next?
Yeah, certainly have. Yeah.
Sportsman's lunch time. Can't miss that.
Can't miss that. Yeah. Everyone's making me hungry. They're all heading off to lunches. We'll have a lovely time, and thanks for joining us on the Country Hour.
Thanks,
Ali. For having us.
Much appreciated.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
You are indeed. You're with me, Ali Felton-Taylor. Amy Phillips is with me as well. Aim, all that talk of lunch is making me hungry. And gee whiz, aren't the crows in full chorus? We're in a salubrious spot here under the awning of a loo here at Beef 2021. I was reliably informed by Blair Angus, who of course was the former chairman of Beef. He knew the building. He said, well, that's very nice, isn't it? Nevertheless, it's a beautiful spot to be in, and the weather's been really good.
I thought those crows were trying to get the insight into those, you know, that new abattoir.
But yes, it isn't.
Head west, boys, head west.
They knew. They got the skinny on it.
They certainly did. Here's what else is making news, though. A wild game processor, Western Game Processing, has been awarded a nearly $300,000 federal government grant to create an app to enhance traceability for kangaroo and wild game. It's in response to the increasing importance on reliability and sustainability of game meat. Western Game Processing Director Ben Cameron says, to start with, Roo Shooter supplying the Long Reach facility, or the Long Reach box, will be given an app to log real-time kangaroo harvesting data from point of origin to processing. This system will eliminate the need for harvesters to manually record data using those well-known paper tags. Russia was Australia's largest and most important market for kangaroo meat exports, as you'll remember, Ali, until mid-2009, all those years back, when it banned imports after finding high levels of bacterial contamination. Now, by digitising this data, good luck if you've got the internet, though, out the paddock. Agriculture Minister David Littleproud says we can enhance traceability for biosecurity and food recall, which is important for accessing foreign markets. And now for you, Arles, and everyone else at Beef Week listening along this Friday lunch hour. Gee, I hope your feet will be up when you get home on Sundays. Or maybe for you, Ali, your husband. He's been wrangling those kids all week for you. Don't forget to tune into Landline, where Pip Courtney will be wrapping up your beef experience with an interview with former cattle vet Shannon Spate, who's blazing a new career in ag tech. Her genetics business aims to help beef producers make better decisions on farm and animal management. I couldn't think of a better way to wrap up Beef 2021. Tune in on Sunday at lunchtime.
Nor could I, Amy Phillips, and a special thanks to you back there in the studio. You were to come up here, and we've missed you greatly at Beef Week, but we do have to thank you very much for pressing the buttons for us back home in Toowoomba.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. With that in mind, it was a bit chilly here at Beef Week last night. People were reaching for their shawls, their jumpers. I mean, a lot of the men had coats, but they whacked them on because it was chilly. Phelim Hanafy at the Bureau, a little bit cooler in parts. I know we're not calling it a cold snap as such, but certainly a bit cooler.
It was, yeah. The imprint of that drier air, we had temps anywhere from 3 to 7 degrees below average about parts of, particularly about central and northeastern parts of the state, and also extending about the northern interior as well. Further south, a little bit on the milder side, particularly about the southern interior, that little bit of lingering cloud here. But yeah, for areas further north, it was particularly on the chilly side.
Rather chilly. Is that set to continue in the coming days?
It'll gradually warm up tonight now and tomorrow. Still temperatures a little bit on the cooler side, particularly up over that kind of northeastern part of the state, around Townsville and that area. Temps still around that kind of 2 to 4, even 5 below average. Elsewhere though, gradually warming up. So nights over the weekend not as cool, and daytime temperatures recovering as well as you go through the weekend. So really the weekend itself mostly settled, particularly about the east, with, you know, temperatures by Sunday anywhere from 4 to 7 degrees above average. Not completely though, we'll have a little bit of lingering cloud about the downs come tomorrow as well in the Grand Belt, and also in over the southwest, the remains of a weak trough moving into the southwest may bring some patchy light rain to parts of the southwest tomorrow. Very, very light in nature, and then that system kind of pushes into the Maranoa and Warrego on Sunday. Maybe some chance of a shower or a light patchy rain as well about the Maranoa and Warrego come Sunday.
And is it the same setup in the far north too?
The far north, we're looking at still, it's going to remain pretty settled about central and northern parts of the state. Maybe over the far north, if you go up towards beyond Lockhart River, up towards Torres Strait, just a chance of a shower here with an onshore flow, but generally in between, pretty settled.
And further to that, I'm just looking out at the forecast until Thursday. Can we expect rain anywhere, or are we heading a pretty settled period, sunny everywhere?
No, it looks like a change again. It looks like it turns more unsettled. Really from after Sunday, just a bit more cloud bubbling up and more in the way of shower potential, particularly when you look ahead to Monday, Tuesday, even Wednesday and Thursday, there's potential for some a lot more shower activity, particularly about the eastern half of the state, and really more particularly about the central and southeastern parts, where you could get some thunderstorm activity as well, particularly during that kind of during Monday and Tuesday, as we get a weather system rolling across the south. So a lot more unsettled to come for next week.
Well, we'll wait and watch closer to the time when you get a better beat on what's going on with the rain then, when it's closer to it potentially falling. Thank you so much for your time here on the Country Hour.
My pleasure.
Philip Hanafy, Senior Forecaster at the Bureau. We're going to get our sizzle on pretty soon at Beef.
The Queensland Country Hour with Ali Felton-Taylor on ABC Radio Queensland.
Because here you don't have to travel far to find the product in question. That's beef, of course, on offer. And while China seems to prefer the Brazilian offering over the Australian at the moment, Kelly Buchanan found a chef who, perhaps surprisingly, has a different view.
What's your name?
Thiago.
And where are you from?
Brazil.
How long have you been cooking?
A few years, 7 years, I'd say so.
Yeah. What makes a Brazilian barbecue?
That's the way we cook our meats in a flame of charcoal and wood, and we just cook our meats in big speed, so yeah, we just smoke them all.
Brazilian beef versus Australian beef. Any difference?
I think Australian beef is better. I think it's a little bit better than Australia, you know?
And a lot of salt to bring out the flavour?
Yeah, rock salt, the right flame, and yeah, a good beef, that will do it.
And where are you normally when you're not at Beef Australia?
We are actually based in Noosa, so we do big festivals all over Queensland, and yeah, we are a permanent at night quarter in Sunshine Coast as well. So yeah, that's what we are.
What is it about beef that you like cooking?
We just love the rump cap, you know, that's the picanha, that's the main cut for us in Brazil, so yeah, we love beef.
Well, I better let you get to it because you've got a few waiting in the line and a few spits there to turn. Thanks for your time.
And I can't burn my mitts, yeah.
No, do not. Thank you.
Thiago, Kelly Buchanan was over there, and I tell you what, he had a lineup at his truck here at Beef Week. He had to queue for a little while. I think 40 minutes was about the top time to go in and taste some of that beef. There are amazing sights and delights. We hope we've given you a taste of what's been on offer here at Beef Week, but let's turn back to the business of beef, because Meat Standards Australia, or MSA grading, it's something you might see a sticker on when you head to a butcher shop or a supermarket, but what does it actually mean? It's a system of ensuring that each cut of meat you buy meets standards on eating quality, something that's defined by a complex system of measures on pH level, marbling and so on. But Now, 23 years after it began, MSA needs to adapt to the latest technology, which will mean ever more data goes into helping ensure the steak on your fork doesn't disappoint. Tom Major spoke to Peter Gilchrist, a professor of meat science at the University of New England, who says the sometimes flawed human eye can be made more accurate by the latest innovations.
Yeah, so tech's an interesting space, and the ability to transfer data, you know, and all of that. So in the very short term, the tech we're developing at the moment is technology to assist the graders in making their judgment calls about the traits we use in our predictions of the meat quality. So that's around marbling, you know, meat colour, fat colour, eye muscle area, those sort of things. So the technology we use at the moment is humans. But these cameras that we're developing are really reducing the variability in calls. So you're increasing the repeatability and increasing the accuracy of our measurements. So if you increase the data you put into a model, you increase the accuracy of something coming out. Like meteorologists are always working on getting better data to put into their weather models. We're always working on cleaning up our data to put into our meat quality models.
Now, MSA accreditations, they vary from state to state. Some states are quite high, some states quite low. Does this kind of forward technology and ability to get more specialised kind of information and data back to processors through to producers, will that bring a few more back inside the tent, do you believe?
Look, I think it'll really, where technology will help us is companies that are killing across plants or companies that own multiple plants, the consistency going into those brands in terms of the meat quality will really drive value for our industry, because that consumer that buys that brand is going to get the same quality day after day. So will it bring more people back into the tent? I think there's still a lot of money we can make out of utilising the model a lot more. It's a very complex thing. It's a bit like, you know, starting up Microsoft Excel. You can use it to very simply add a couple of cells, or you can make right macros and do all this other crazy stuff. And the MSA model's no different. So you can use it at a very simple in-out level, and then as time goes on, we're getting more and more sophisticated and working out how to make more and more money out of every carcass. And as you can appreciate, in today's day and age, with carcass prices so high, we've got to make every dollar out of every cent, out of every carcass that we can. We can't simply be trading meat because it's not of high enough quality. And I think the real opportunity for us is to, in the older animals or cast for age animals, is to do something with them as well around meal solutions, ready meals. So whether it means chemical tenderization or using science to take the raw meat, do a couple of things to it and make this meal solution. We haven't really moved into that space yet. I think there's still a lot more money we can make out of cattle yet.
It's fascinating and certainly a very important part of getting that value through the supply chain, something we're hearing quite regularly here at Beef 2021. I want to ask a question though about some of the smaller meatworks who may have decided that the accreditation fees and so forth for MSA are too high to sustain their business. Is there some options out there for them in terms of, as you just said, maybe specialising a product for those smaller producers?
Yeah, look, the science is still the science, you know, and so even though they may not be accredited and selling MSA steak, they, or MSA beef, they can still appreciate the science and implement a grading system of their own in their own system. So, yeah, I was talking to one gentleman yesterday around exactly this problem. They only kill 100, 150 a week. The cost of being accredited is a little too high. But he uses the principles of MSA to make sure that his brand, you know, he's got two-tiered brand, and then he gets out the ones that don't perform. So, absolutely, because the science is all published. It's all out there in literature. And so you can... Carcasses are carcasses, so whether you're in the system or not, for some of those smaller guys, that using the science is all they need to do.
That's Peter McGilchrist. He's a professor, of meat science at the University of New England, who says sometimes flawed human eye can obviously make things more accurate by those latest innovations. That's what he was talking about then with Tom Major. But turning to high beef prices and, of course, export markets, which we've been talking about quite a bit on the Country Hour, high beef prices, of course, a boon, but certainly it tests the mettle for processors, as we talked about earlier, especially when the key markets like China are unavailable. Michael Finucan is the industry stakeholder manager for JBS Northern. He's told Tom Major supply chain value has been top of mind this week.
we're looking at how do we continue to drive value into our brands, and part of the work that I've been looking at is how do we look at our supply base and how do we improve the consistency and quality of the animals coming in, and making sure that we hit our brand specs, which meets our customer specs every time.
Producer feedback, it's something that they're always crying out for, but sometimes there does seem to be a bit of a gap, sometimes in the communications. How well is that being breached, do you believe?
Yeah, we're building this livestock portal, which is going to put that data back in the hands of our cattle buyers so they can have an informed conversation with our vendors, and then we're going to be able to get the vendors to be able to log on and interrogate that data themselves. So it builds a conversation between us, JBS, and our cattle suppliers, but then we're able to empower them to look at the data and make decisions on farm.
What about on the killing floor and in the processing plant? What sort of increased carcass value have you identified over the last very sort of difficult couple of years?
We're always, we're consistently looking at ways to improve the productivity and efficiency through the plant. There's consistent work and programs to do that. So I don't have an exact figure, but this program will start to help us drive value at least in the animals that are coming through.
Just a massive business and a massive processing footprint, I suppose, right across Australia that JBS does indeed have. What are some of the key kind of market opportunities for increasing that extracted value over the years?
Yeah, we supply into just about every market around the world, but there's always opportunities to do it better and to find more customers. So, whether it's Japan and Korea, looking at selling higher value cuts there, working with our US customers on our organic or our new grass-fed program, they're looking for that product, and in the Middle East, we're really finding opportunities there and across the whole Middle East for that higher end grain fed product.
Grain fed, is that obviously one of the additional extra sort of benefits you can get out of it, getting it into more of these countries?
Yeah, our grain fed program's a really big pillar of what we do. We've got some really great brands, consistent quality, well respected around the world. We work with our overseas customers, whether it's a supermarket or a butcher, to continue to communicate to the customer the benefits of the grain-fed product and how it eats and how good it is. So, it's a huge part of our business.
The China equation at the moment, quite a difficult one for a lot of processors. Is that something that requires some fresh thinking?
We're obviously impacted by the China closures, and we just continue to work through the government to look at how we can reopen that.
What was some of the talk on the floor here? What was some of the feedback you're getting about these movements into the portal in particular, but also other ways of communicating what the processor really wants to identify in the meat industry?
Yeah, look, I've been on our stand for the last 4 days, and we would have engaged with over 100 producers through that, and they're just loving the simplicity of the portal. They're able to see where they missed the grid and be able to dive in. You can delve further and further using the interactive software and actually dive in and see what were the actual animal specs that made them drop out. So the feedback's been really good. They're looking forward to getting it into their own hands as soon as possible.
And you were based in Southeast Asia yourself, in other parts of Asia as well, for many years. What's the most exciting developing market in your opinion?
There's a lot. I mean, Vietnam's a really exciting one. It's a really maturing economy really quickly, good GDP, really great people, and they eat beef. It's a core part of their diet. So I think that's a really great market, and a lot of people are watching that as it grows.
Australia's got a lot of challenges, I guess, for these key markets, though. How can Australia, I guess, make sure that we ingratiate ourselves with these customers when there is a lot of option out there and, indeed, a lot of very competitive export opportunities for them?
Yeah, that's our job, to keep working with our importers and their customers to communicate the benefits of Australian beef. The food safety, the quality, the meat science that goes behind getting a consistent product. So, we do that every day with our customers and work through that and show them that value proposition.
And Beef Australia 2021, what's been the big takeaway for you in terms of the industry's ongoing attempts to make sure it continues its growth pattern?
Yeah, it's been a great week. You always get to meet a lot of producers, a lot of enthusiasm. As I said, I've focused on this portal and the feedback, and a lot of excitement in that. And it's obviously a good time for the cattle guys that have got animals, and I think there's generally a good buoyant mood.
JBS Northern Industry Stakeholder Manager Michael Finucane speaking there with Tom Major. It's 10 to 1.
Hi, I'm Maggie Reed from Proserpine, and you're listening to the Queensland Country Hour live at Beef Australia.
Indeed, you are. So much innovation here. We've focused on tech. And you're going to hear about a one-stop shop for making commercial decisions about your cattle. AgriWeb founder John Farger has told graziers, and indeed launched a product, that can help people make a decision on whether or not every beast on their property is making money as they come through the crush.
The barrier to getting is so low. You know, we're talking anywhere from, you know, $750 a year up to $2,500 a year, depending on the, you know, the size of operation and what you're looking to achieve. If you're a mob-based solution or if you're looking at that individual management solution. So, you know, we're talking for a couple of $1,000, which is ultimately, you know, a steer at this point, in order to basically supercharge your entire business. And across our customer base, we see, you know, productivity gains of up to 7.5%. So you put that across, you know, across a herd that doesn't even need to be very significant at that point, and you're paying it back in 1 or 2 weeks ultimately, and then the power of that moving forward, not to mention, you know, saving all of that time and stress, and really, you know, setting yourself up to move your business forward. And ultimately, you know, it won't become whether you want to adopt technology. It won't be a choice at some point, because the demands we have on the industry, the consumer wants to see more. There's more traceability, more provenance that's going to be required. And also, in order to actually meet these macro goals of producing more, feeding the population, you know, whether we like it or not, we're going to have to adopt technology. We're going to have to move our business forward. And look, our farming community has always been even innovative. They've always been willing to have a crack, but the key is it's got to be simple, it's got to be easy, it's got to be farmer friendly, and that's what our focus is on day to day. And if we crack that, then we're up and away.
It's a world first innovation as we stand here and talk about it today that you've launched here at Beef 21, but there's plenty of operators in this space. Do you think you'll see competitors come up with similar sorts of contents? And in that, obviously, pools of grant money and support from the government and various entities is limited. Is there a lot of competition for that?
Oh, I think, you know, as I mentioned 7 years ago, we were the first to come in and really build software for livestock farmers in particularly and mixed farmers. And obviously we've seen a few other companies come along. But ultimately what we see is people solving point solutions, and we're sort of much more holistic in pulling all that together. And also I would say, you know, there's enough opportunity out there and there's enough market share for multiple players. And the more players that come into the market, it just means more education, more awareness, more producers adopting technology, and then the industry wins. So, you know, we much, you know, would prefer to look on the collaborative side rather than the competitive side. And, you know, more is more, and we can get that awareness out there. And getting to your point around industry, so this is really where I think, you know, private organisations like AgriWeb, like ourselves, are the best in the world at what we do, which is building software and delivering a great service to our customers. Where industry bodies can really help is really in that education awareness space. So it's really around driving, I guess, the problems, the solutions, the benefits of all of that, bringing all of that, those then private parties to market and exposing that so customers, farmers can then make their own decisions. And then, you know, if they can bring some funds into that and support that change management, because that's a big piece about this, is actually changing our practices. We know that, you know, most producers are out there running their business off pencil and paper notebook. So helping them go through that shift and through that change, and, you know, helping them financially on the way. And then we know, if, you know, from our customer base, you know, under 0.5% of people leave us. So when we know we take people through, they put down that pencil and paper notebook that goes through the washing machine, when they put that down and use our software every single day, they see so much value that it's really transformed their business. And so if they could have some help on the way in, then we know that they're going to continue on and be successful in their business.
That's John Farger. He's the AgriWeb founder. I spoke to him a bit earlier this week. He launched a world-first platform whereby individual cattle can be identified crush side, and bits of data, including weights and things like their sires and indeed progeny, etc., and things like carcass data can be pulled so they can make decisions crush side. Not long now, and we're talking about a big game that's happening today. It's all coming up.
Yeah, my name's Ivan and I'm from Moongil Yulba. The stud is Moongil Charolais, and we won the Interbreed Champion Female, and I'm at Beef 2021.
Indeed he is. Well, beef producers are usually pretty comfortable out in the paddock tonight. A couple are getting a run that may just put them through their paces. The Beef Barbarians will shape up against the Classic Wallabies in a rugby union clash fit for beef. Fresh off his win, with the Supreme Champion female Moongool Radical 24. Charolais breeder Ivan Price is pulling on his boots tonight.
I am. I'm roped into this. I'm not probably at age where I should be playing football, but I'm not a union player. I played rugby league, but I'm going to pull the jersey on tonight, and hopefully I'll only be out in the centres or somewhere. I'll keep out of trouble out there. So
he was speaking at breakfast a little early on. Ivan Price gearing up to take on the Classic Wallabies. Now our reporter Anthea Moody has been on this story like a fly on a bull. She got Morgan Turanui to explain just who the Classic Wallabies are.
Yeah, so the Classic Wallabies and Wallaroos is the groupings of Classic Wallabies, the former international men's players, and Wallaroos, the women's players. Everyone who's played test match rugby for Australia and Rugby Union, men or women, is a grouping. And then the purpose of the Classic Wallabies now is to help grow the game and pretty much just share our love for the game and try and give back. Rugby's obviously given so much to those individuals that were lucky enough to wear a gold jersey that it's an opportunity to give back.
And are you playing in the game?
I am playing. It's funny, we all start negotiating. One, around training. Gee, I should have trained. I've only got a day to go. Is it too late? And two, it's all, I've only got 5 minutes in me. So I've got about 100 water boys, lots of people that want to play 5 minutes. No one wants to play the full 80. So what we always get a bit worried that we're going to be showing up, but hopefully being international players, we're still putting on a gold jersey that means a lot to us. So we still want to win, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't think that competitive energy ever dies, does it? No.
That's one thing I've noticed as well. It never does. I suppose the big thing is that we've had some great support up here from Beef Week, and everyone around Rockhampton, the people of Rocky Sports Club and things like that. So we talk about what we're trying to give to the community, but we couldn't do it without the support of the community. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for their help. So when we're trying to give back to a community, I think it's great, especially around that agribusiness, people come together so that we can do those things. So we realise that we can't do it without other people's support. It's great that the whole Rockhampton, even the whole of Capricornia rugby in the region, come together so that we can do these things.
So you also run a few clinics when you travel around. What is the aim of these clinics?
Yeah, I think the big thing for individual Classic Wallabies is that they're free kids clinics, so we get funding elsewhere so that kids never pay to come and get the expert coaching. And that's what we sort of found. Originally, the Classic Wallabies 20 years ago was former players having reunions and catching up and playing golf, and then we thought, well, we could do things better. And what we realised is that we've actually got a really great amount of rugby knowledge that these people can share, and this is an avenue for it. So the Classic Wallaby 3 Kids Clinics is just that, connecting kids who might not have access to such high-level coaching with people, funny enough, who, yes, they played for the Wallabies, but they've also coached internationally, coached professionally overseas, coached professionally in Australia, know so much about the game.
In travelling around to these areas, what have you noticed about sport? Is it something that really drives the community?
Yeah, I think it is. There's a few things. We noticed that, especially in rural areas, regional areas, that the volunteer is even more important, the people that put their hand up and drive it. So often it's a couple of parents or some committed people in a small community that really drive clubs and participation. We're amazed at the talent. There's so much talent here, and the pathways are there, but they're so much easier in the big cities. But what we do see is we just see kids with amazing amount of natural talent that hopefully some of the coaching we can give them will help. And also the commitment it takes to play sport, the travel on weekends to play opposition. We all know stories about how far and how much time it takes and how big the petrol bill is trying to get kids to sport in rural areas. So it's amazing to see, one, the talent, two, the sense of community it takes to get people on the field, but also that commitment to participate in sport.
What they've lost in pace, they've put on in pounds. That's Morgan Turanui speaking there with Anthea Moody. Jeez, the beef bar bars. I know former ABC foreign correspondent Martin Cutter, he's running on to them. Industry Identity Will Wilson's there. Thoughts and prayers to those blokes. Thoughts and prayers to my feet too. Callie Buchanan, what a week it's been.
It has been an absolute firecracker of a week, and we couldn't have done it without the great crew that's been behind us here at the Country Hour. Amy Phillips in the studio, Anthony Amudia, who you heard from there, Maddie McCosker, who's taken on the Rural Report, and Tom Major, as well as support from our ABC Capricornia colleagues. It's been a team effort, I reckon the Wallabies would be proud of.
Absolutely. Going for gold here at Beef Week. We've enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed it too. You can listen back to our podcasts, of course, and jump on the Beef blog. It's got a lot of photos and a little bit more of the atmosphere that's happening here at Beef than you've already heard. Hope you have a safe and happy weekend. That's all from us, the Country Hour, at Beef 2021. News time, 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.